Hello everyone, welcome to the ALN Talk Show, a free space to discuss different developments in Muslim-majority countries and beyond. This is our 18th episode, and we're very happy and honored to have Professor Mustafa Ashar with us, and he is a professor in Erbakan University in Konya, Turkey. Dr. Mustafa, very happy to have you with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you very much. We should know that Dr. Mustafa is really busy, and really thank you for, you know, allocating this time for us. We actually met in the ILN 9th conference in Mardin, Turkey, last October. He was a great speaker at the conference. And he actually, by the way, wrote a fantastic reflection on that conference, and I invite you all to check it out on our website in the section ILN 9th conference. And yeah, so let's start our talk today. We're going to be talking about something very important, which is, you know, related to economy. And I'll let you introduce the topic, Dr. Mustafa.
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me and giving a chance to talk to ILN audience all over the world. And it was my pleasure to meet you in Mardin and our other colleagues there. It was a fantastic event, and I had a chance to write down my reflections, even if it is a little belated. But I am glad in the end I had a chance to write down and share it with you. Also, I would like to wish a happy and healthy Ramadan to you, to your family, and to all Muslim Ummah and the humanity at large. We are in the holy month of Ramadan. We are fasting, and we are trying to, rethink throughout our life everything, what's going on, how we are doing, what is right, what is wrong. Yeah, are we doing okay or not? Should there be anything that we should change, etc., etc.? So I wish everybody has a chance to actually review, rethink, and restart, if you like, to their lives. Okay.
What a beautiful introduction! Thank you for this.
Okay.
Yeah. So as I said, let's embark in our theme of the day. So we're going to be talking about Islam, free market, capitalism, and anti-capitalist fallacies. And as you mentioned in your reflection, for those who are going to read it, you were working on translating a book by a famous German intellectual. I'll let you pronounce the name because I really can't. I mean, I'm not good at German. Yeah, so it's called 10 Greatest Fallacies of Anti-Capitalist. Let us just start by asking you, what is the book talking about? And, you said it's a very interesting one. So how is it very interesting?
Okay, good question, they say. remember, Teslim, Islam and capitalism is a hot topic.
Yeah.
Discussed all over the world, especially in the Muslim world, whether they are friend or foe. Is there an intrinsic contradiction between Islam and capitalism? Mm-hmm. By capitalism, we mean rather by, free market capitalism rather than monopoly capitalism or crony capitalism, as they say. But when we say capitalism, we understand free market capitalism or free market economy, if you like, okay?
Right.
So I'm going to turn back to this discussion in the Muslim world, whether they are compatible or not. But let me just talk a little bit about the book that I have just translated and published very recently. It is Anti-Capitalist Fallacies. The original name of the book actually was The 10 Greatest Anti-Capitalist Fallacies, okay? And this is part of a huge, big project based on a survey conducted 32 countries all over the world, including Muslim countries, including non-Muslim ones, European countries, as well as Asian countries, African countries, American countries, etc. So it's a huge project. Based on a survey, they asked certain questions about, you know, hey, people, how do you like capitalism? What do you think of capitalism?
When they ask them,
what do you think of, you know, what comes to your mind, etc. And before that, before giving, you know, sharing the results of the survey, the author, Mr. Rainer Zitelmann, actually critically evaluated the 10 greatest anti-capitalist fallacies that frequently, you know, we hear all over the world. Here are what, you know, here are the those anti-capitalist fallacies. Number one, capitalism is responsible for hunger and poverty.
Yeah.
Whether it is true or not, whether it, you know, is compatible with the figures, the historical facts or not. Second, capitalism leads to growing inequality.
Yeah. Number three, we heard that all the time.
Yeah. Capitalism is responsible for environmental destruction and climate change. Another big blame on capitalism.
Yeah.
Oh man, come on, capitalism is destroying our environment. Number four, capitalism repeatedly leads to new economic and financial crises. In other words, recurrent economic and financial crises are the result of a natural consequence of capitalism, they say. Another one is capitalism is dominated by the rich. They set the political agenda. Another one, capitalism leads to monopolies.
Right.
Not competition, but monopolies everywhere, they say. And another one, capitalism promotes selfishness and greedy.
Are you sure these are myths?
Okay. And what else? Capitalism entices people to buy products they don't need. Actually, they don't need to buy this much, this and that, but capitalism entices them, fools them into.
So this is not a myth.
Put them into a trap so that they have to spend all of their money.
Right.
What else? Capitalism leads to wars. Actually, the wars, the conflicts, we can see different parts of the world is a result of, you know, capitalist, they say, greed or capitalist purposes. And the last one is capitalism means that there is always a danger of fascism. So, Mr. Zitelmann, one by one, critically evaluates and criticizes all of them and shows actually that these are really fallacies, not the facts. These are not supported by historical facts, numbers, figures. And it compares the performance of free market capitalism with communism, socialism, fascism, and, you know, different models all over the world at different times. And he points out that actually all the socialist experiments failed repeatedly, one after the other failed. But the free market capitalism, even though it had sometimes it has some, you know, crises, etc., fluctuations, ups and downs, but nevertheless, it somehow adapts to new conditions, changing conditions, and move on.
Right.
So it is it's an important piece of book. Okay. I urge our audience, our listeners, if you like, if they are interested in capitalism, free market economy, and what are the alternatives to capitalism or free market economy, it is a very nice book to read and to think about. And also, it is very important for us to go over all of these fallacies so that when we come to talk about Islam versus capitalism.
Islam, we know what we're talking about.
Economy, if they are compatible or not, okay. It is extremely important for us to have this accumulation of knowledge, to have these figures and the historical facts, so that we can actually make a better, more convincing analysis, mm-hmm. right?
Before we proceed, just a question. So if we can take one of these myths, and just you can just take us through how the writer debunked it. Like, is there any, like, even a small percentage of truth that some of them are true? Like, even a small percentage, because everything you've said, it seems real, but you're saying they're myths. So so if we can take an example of how one of them is actually a myth and not a truth.
Okay. Before the rise of capitalism, actually, uh-huh. hunger and poverty was a much more demanding, outstanding problem, much bigger problem in all over the world. In the last two centuries, starting from Western Europe, mm-hmm. and you know, gradually expanding all the way east to the China today, these days, the percentage of people, you know, facing hunger and poverty, the percentage is lowest throughout the world,
absolutely.
Throughout the history. Okay, so before the advent of capitalism, these problems are much higher, much bigger, terrible. But now, you know, just taking an example as China, 50 years ago, when Mao, the great leader of China, Mao, you know, died, more than 30, maybe around 50 million people died of hunger, okay?
Right.
Due to, you know, the communist, centralist, central planning policies, mm-hmm. And, you know, anti-capitalist, anti-market,
right.
You know, policies. Millions of people actually went to death, died of hunger.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, China become the second largest economy in the world today, even, you know, head to head with the United States economy, which is the number one economy, largest economy in the world.
Yes.
So the number of people who are raised above the poverty level is very striking in China. Millions and millions of people were actually lifted above the threshold of poverty. Thanks to what? Thanks to the capitalization of, you know, China's actually redirecting itself from socialist central plan economic system to more capitalist, more free market economy, opening mm-hmm. up the borders to the world. And you know, being a member of World yeah. Trade Organization,
that's allowing totally valid.
Direct yeah. investments in the country, etc., etc. So this is just one example.
Yeah. That's totally valid. I see your point. Nobody can deny this. But maybe those who are criticizing capitalism and blaming it for all the poverty in the world are simply saying that capitalism can do. I mean, it's causing some of the, you know, actual numbers of poverty right now, and it could come up with more solutions to, you know, eradicate even the small percentages of poverty in the world now compared to the higher percentages before. That's all what they're saying. It could do better, but it's not. Maybe the criticism stemming from this. So the question is, can it do better, or is it somehow causing the actual poverty that we're facing in the world right now? I know it's minimal compared to before, but it's still high.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You know, due to COVID-19, coronavirus pandemic, and some other problems, mm-hmm. sometimes the number of people, suffering from hunger goes up.
Yeah.
But in general, when we compare today, 50 years ago, or at the beginning of the century, of the last century, or before mm-hmm. the advent of capitalism, we are relatively in a better condition. And the World Bank is actually targeting that the the you know, share of the people of hunger, you know, suffering from hunger, should be lowered to below 5% by 2030s. You know, the like 7 years from now should be the percentage of poor people should be decreased to a minimum level. So let's hope that actually
you think that's achievable.
Yeah, I think as long as actually as human beings, as political authorities, as governments all over the world, actually instead of fighting, instead of putting billions of dollars into war industry, okay, if we actually change our mentality and if we put more weight on cooperation, collaboration, you know, or production, free trade, investments, etc., it is possible, quite possible, to reduce the number of poor people who are suffering from hunger all over the world. So it's a problem of mentality and the actual policy that we choose to implement. Rather than fighting and making war, we can change our, you know, destination, change our mentality, change our policies, and put our limited resources into more cooperation, production, investment, sharing, and caring. Can I show you an interesting picture?
Sure.
Actually, this, you know, I said the book is part of a big project based on a survey conducted in 32 countries in the world, right? Muslim and non-Muslims alike.
Okay.
The moment that I heard that actually there is a survey going on and asking people in the street, how do you like capitalism? What do you think of capitalism? You know, how sensitive are you against capitalism? I said, okay, I believe, my guess is that Turkey will be the most anti-capitalist country in the world.
You were proven right.
And I was right. I was right. Because this is not just simple, you know, dream or just, you know, just estimation, you know, out of nothing, out of blue. It was actually based on my observations all over the world. I am almost 58 years old, and I was 16, just 16, then I joined a Middle East Technical University Department of Economics some 50 years ago, okay, so some 40 years ago. Since then, I actually have undergrad degree in economics, master's degree in economics, PhD degree in economics. I did my master's and PhD in the United States. I spent my lifetime going throughout, you know, traveling around more than 40 countries. So I have a lot of accumulation of observations in different societies, in different circles, intellectuals and men on the street. And my observation was that Turkey is one of the most anti-capitalist, anti-market, anti-freedom countries in the world. Come on, you know?
And, how so? Why is Turkey the most anti-capitalist country in the world?
There must be you know, many historical, sociological, political, and economic reasons for that. And I think we should talk this on another time, because we have a limit, as far as I know, we have a limited amount of time. When I look at the results, you know, of the survey, you can see, as I just estimated or predicted, Turkey is the most anti-capitalist country in the world. Poland, it's a former USSR country, you know, former communist country.
Yes.
Right now, it joined the European Union in the 2004, it is the most pro-capitalist, not anti-pro-capitalist country in the world. USA, even United States, coming after Poland. So there are, among 32 countries, only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, only 6 countries have been found to be pro-capitalist, right?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Only 7 out of 32 countries is neutral.
You know,
neither pro nor anti-capitalist. It's okay. Somewhere in between.
Right.
The rest, all 19 out of 32 countries, that is, you know, almost two-thirds of the countries in the world is against or anti-capitalist, Turkey number one, being the number one country. So this is an interesting phenomena, even though, look, we are using internet, through yes. which we are communicating now, okay?
Yep.
We are using all sorts of social media, the smartphones, cellular phones, the internet technology, computers, etc., etc. These are all actually the products, the inventions of free market capitalism, not
Absolutely.
Communism, not fascism, not any other, you know, socioeconomic order. Yet,
yeah.
we are, when you ask people, what do you think about capitalism? Capitalism is responsible for hunger and poverty. Capitalism is responsible for climate change, wars. Come on, guys. Come on, please. Calm down, they say. Calm down.
Yes. And so you think people are not aware enough of the, you know, of the simple products they're using and where they're coming from, but still they're criticizing capitalism? Do you think it's because of ignorance?
good question. Unfortunately, colonialism, right? You know, after the Industrial Revolution, if you like, when mm-hmm. the big Western powers, you know, started to dominate all over the world. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, many parts of the Muslim world had suffered from colonization.
Okay.
This actually put a big weight on that. You know, why we are anti-capitalist? Because capitalism is something developed, produced, invented by the Westerners, by the colonial powers. It is their order. Okay.
It's a psychological reaction. Yeah.
They actually exploit our resources. They, you know, they invade us. Number another one. Maybe
hold on a second. Don't you think that there is like a percentage of truth there in the argument you just shared?
Sorry?
No? Is there any percentage of truth in the argument you just shared that capitalism is invented by the colonial powers and they are, you know, stealing our resources and stuff? No truth to that? Absolutely not?
Okay.
I'm just trying to challenge you.
I don't have ready number right now, but in my opinion, as far as I can guess or estimate, you know, the 75% of the Muslim, you know, population all over the world thinks that capitalism is something invented by the Western colonial powers, and this is one of the main sources of why we are against capitalism. But let me add this. Actually, anti-freedom, anti-free market mentality, anti-freedom mentality, anti-capitalist mentality, if you like, actually came from our background. There has been a clash of mentalities back in the history, in the Muslim history, in the history of Islamic thought, if you like, Ahli Hadith versus Ahli Ray. Reason versus tradition.
Yes.
Aql versus Naql. Okay. Freedom of will versus fatalism, fate.
Yeah.
Right? Using our rationality, reason, or just looking at what the earlier generations wrote about it. So there has been a conflict between these two type mentality, rationalist, free will mentality on one side, on the other side, fatalist and literalist mentality, okay? And unfortunately, as I mentioned in one of my earlier articles, also included in this book, Islamic Foundations of a Free Society, unfortunately, the fatalist, literalist, irrationalist, school dominated all over the world. Then we became, somehow hesitant against all sorts of freedoms. Mm-hmm. We just closed our borders, tried to close our borders to any sort of changes, new waves, and coming from outside. Mm-hmm. Thinking that everything coming from outside should be dangerous, should not be accepted, should be rejected right on time. So this mentality also, that is actually the philosophical, intellectual, and mentality base of the reason why we are somehow against, keep a long distance between free market economy today. And to reiterate this, I have been thinking about whether free market capitalism or free market economy is contradicting or incompatible with Islam.
ILN
has been trying to do, actually, in my opinion, there is no intrinsic antagonism or unfriendly or contradiction between Islamic values and free market economy, because free market economy is based on basically five or six institutions. Let me mention them briefly, one by one. Number one, private property. Number two, freedom of choice and free enterprise. Number three, competition, that is free enter and exit from the market.
Yeah.
And number four, limited government, that is there is no central planning and individual decision making is a must. And everybody should be able to actually decide on what to produce, how to produce, when, where, and for whom to produce. That
this is pure Islamic economy.
Free trade. Lastly, the price mechanism should be allowed to fluctuate. That is, prices should be determined by demand and supply. These are basic institutions of a free market economy. And then you ask, what does Islam have to do with these? Is there any contradiction between these institutions and basic Islamic tenets? No.
No, whatsoever. No.
On the contrary, actually, yes. Islam is perfectly compatible, goes hand in hand, supporting these values and these institutions. Just looking at the three main features of Medina market, okay?
Yes.
Let me just remind them. Three main features of Medina market. Medina market is established actually by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, peace be upon him, okay? It was established on a level playing field. That is, everybody can see everybody else. So there is nothing secret. Everything is open. So in today's terminology, we can say there was transparency.
Yeah.
Everybody was able to see what's going on. Number two, there was no fixed allocation of any corner of the market. Today, you came earlier than myself and you get this corner. But next week, who knows? I can come earlier than you and there is mine. So there is no fixed particular places allocated to any particular person. That is, there is no monopoly. There is competition. The marketplace open to free entry and free exit, okay? Number three, prices were not fixed, Okay.
It could fluctuate.
Mm-hmm. The fluctuating prices, you know, going down or up, depending on the market conditions, that is demand and supply. Once upon a time, Sahaba, some of the companions actually complained about prices going up and asked the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam to fix the prices. After contemplating 3 days, he came out and said, no, I have no right to do that. I cannot fix the prices. Prices are determined by God, he said. And said, I don't want to go in the hereafter, in the day of judgment, because of fixing the prices, causing harm to any one of you. Okay?
Right.
These are, remember, all these are the indispensable principles of a free market economy. That's mm-hmm. it. So, in my opinion, there is no hesitation at yeah. all that Islam is not a foe, but a friend of free market economy, mm-hmm. and there is no incompatibility or there is no contradiction between Islamic values and the main institutions of free market economy. So they are not foes, but they are friends.
Yeah.
And Islam and free market economy is compatible. That's it.
I mean, in principle, that is true. But, you know, things don't usually go that way. Even in free markets, there are always people, you know, not abiding by these very rules. So that's the problem that we should, you know, address and try to correct, but not say that they are foes because they're not.
That's, yeah.
Well, this is fascinating. I wish we can go on and on this. I think we should have another episode with you, Doctor. I know you're very busy, but thank you so much for this. I have just a question that I'm sure the viewers would want to learn about. How many books have you written and published and translated so far? We know the answer. I just want them to know.
Good question, they say. In the last some 30 years, mm-hmm. okay, I have written or co-authored or edited 22 books in Turkish, 22, and mm-hmm. I have translated 19 of books from English to Turkish,
mm-hmm.
And also I contributed 65 chapters to different edited collected books.
Mashallah.
So quite a number.
yeah, and you're still doing more. So you just finished a book and maybe you're embarking on a new one. So that's very inspiring. Exactly. And I'm very happy to have you in the Island Network.
I am working on a new one.
I just told you, see?
Denationalization of Money, which was authored by famous liberal thinker, an economist, and political scientist, Frederick August von Hayek, very famous figure, right? Yeah. He actually wrote some 60 years ago and talked about denationalization of money, okay? So mm-hmm. taking away the government monopoly to issue money, and there should be a place, you know, some competing, recurrent, different monies at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it's very interesting.
Yeah, we'll have another episode on it when we finish it.
Yeah. I don't know, who knows, but actually I am working on something, yes.
Yeah. Okay, Doctor, thank you very much. We're very happy to have had you with us today and looking forward to hosting you again in the Island Talk Show and meeting you again in future ILN conferences. Thank you very much.
And I wish my best to all the audience and happy Ramadan again.
Ramadan Kareem. Thank you very much. Goodbye.